Welcome to the Getting the Deal podcast. This is John Martinka, and my special guest today is my good friend Billy Pohl with NAI Puget Sound Properties. Thanks for waving, Billy. I'm sure everyone will see that on the video, but maybe not catch it on the audio portion.
Hi, everybody.
You know, the real estate has been in the headlines a lot lately. Office space, retail space from downtown areas like Seattle and San Francisco to the suburbs. So I thought it great to get a real estate expert on, and Billy sure is that. And his business and mine are very much similar. We are matching buyers or sellers or tenants and landlords and trying to get a deal done and a win-win deal. So, Billy, let's start with 2 minutes or so on your background.
Yeah. So, thanks for having me, John. And yeah, I when you're talking about being connectors and matchmakers, that's exactly it. I mean, that's what we do. We bring buyers and sellers or landlords and tenants together. I've been doing this for the past 20 years. My background was in the food and hospitality business before that. I did a quick stint in high tech in the sales and business development side, and then got into commercial real estate back in 2003. I always make the joke, it's not so much a joke, but I make the parallel as far as when you work in the restaurant business as a waiter and you manage a big section in a restaurant, that's not too different from what I do actually day to day from being a broker in commercial real estate. So I think I learned some of the best things that I've ever learned professionally by working those formative years when I was in high school and college in the food service business. And fortunately, I get to work with a bunch of different restaurants and food companies and just a wide variety of different people in the practice that I have now. So my partner and I, Dean Alteris, have been doing this. Dean's been doing this for 35 years. I'm 20 years, and we're generalists in the business. So we work on a wide variety of not only product type, but different types of businesses. And our specialty is really dealing with families and their portfolios and small businesses here in the greater King County area.
Okay. So, well, let's talk about the headlines, Billy. We read a lot about the office situation and, you know, the retail, and especially like in downtown Seattle and other places, the boarded up buildings. And then, of course, there's the industrial, the warehouse, the warehouses, the manufacturing, et cetera. So let's start with office.
Okay. Yeah.
What's going on Seattle, East Side, other suburbs?
It's really, I would say, the market, when people ask me, okay, how's the market doing? And my standard response, especially over the past couple of months, is it's really choppy and it's really hit or miss right now. And I would say when you're comparing Seattle to the East Side, if you want to compare Seattle to Bellevue, Kirkland, Redmond, Issaquah, even Woodinville, Bothell, it's like a tale of two different cities. There's just a lot more happening on the East Side. I think, you know, Seattle has its own set of problems and difficulties right now. There's just more optimism, I would say, on the East Side. But in terms of just the big macro picture, office, if you're looking at the office category, office is just a lot slower than some of the other sectors right now. And I think a big reason is because nobody knows what the future will bring. And hybrid work and getting people back to an office environment, there's so much mixed feelings about it right now. And nobody, nobody that I've talked to is 100% certain of what's going to happen. We think we know what's going to happen, but nobody knows with 100% certainty. So I would say the office market is slow in general. It's certainly slower in Seattle than it is on the East Side. You know, I'm staring out the window right now, and there's some really big office towers being built in Bellevue right now. And most of them have been leased up already. So I would say it's a tale of two different cities, and we can get into the other sectors in a little bit here, but a lot more optimism about things on the East Side than the West Side.
So really a tenant's market, would you say?
Absolutely. I mean, part of that just depends on the size of what the tenants are looking for. But yeah, I mean, there are just a lot more opportunities for tenants, you know, now, here we are in September 2023, than there were a year ago, for sure.
Okay.
And prices have come down. I mean, I think across the board, rates have come down, you know, on average about 10 to 15%. And just the other incentives that landlords are offering right now for tenants is a lot different than it was a couple of years ago.
Okay.
Way more
about retail.
Retail's, I mean, a funny phenomenon right now. I mean, I've been really busy with my retail tenants, especially again on the east side. Seattle retail, especially downtown core retail, has been slower. I mean, it's picking up a little bit now, especially with Amazon requiring employees to go 3 days a week into the office. We're starting to see that affect the overall retail market. But on the east side, retail has been really vibrant. You know, when you're talking in retailers looking in that 1200 to 3000 square foot range, there is not a lot of inventory. And a lot of people have been, I call it replaced or displaced and then replaced. And a lot of, with a lot of new construction going on in the east side, a lot of retailers have lost their leases and looking for other spaces. And that's put pressure on the amount of supply that's over here. And rates have continued to stay steady or even increase, you know, over the past couple of years. So retail actually is the most vibrant sector, I would say, right now, certainly on the east side.
Okay. So what about industrial space?
Industrial was like the gem of the business for many, many years, right? Everybody thought it was completely COVID-proof, and there's just a lot of supply chain things that were keeping inventory really, really tight. But that slowed down as well. I mean, I would say of this three sectors, industrial is probably still the busiest of the three, but it has definitely cooled down since it did a year and a half ago. But rates have not really decreased that significantly in that time yet.
Okay. So that's a good market assessment for the Seattle area. What about, let's talk about landlord relationships, relations with the landlord. What are you seeing? How important is it?
I mean, I've always said, hey, our job, like you alluded to before, John, is to bring landlords and tenants together. And I always feel like the most important thing we do is get that relationship off on the right foot. I think landlord relationships are extremely important. And during COVID, nothing was more important than the relationship you had with your landlord, because that's how we got through the COVID times together. So, I always advise my clients on having the best relationship they can with the landlord. And even when things come up that seem unreasonable on both sides, you just want to keep those relationships as friendly and amicable as you can. I mean, it's, look, some people think, okay, you go through this hard negotiation, and then once that's over, you have a lease in place and you're done dealing with that person. That's actually part of the process, but the most important process is when you've signed the lease and you actually go in and you become a tenant, or if you're the landlord, that's when you welcome your tenant into the building. I mean, I think those relationships are paramount to people being successful.
Yeah. So what's the difference between a relationship with the landlord, say a pension fund, versus a family that owns the building or the strip mall?
Yeah, I mean, in my practice over the years, I've been more on the local family ownership side, on the mom and pops, if you will, than the institutional side. I will say locally, you know, the people that I work with and deal with, I mean, they generally know the tenants. They'll stop in and see the businesses. They get to know them. Right. I mean, they know their kids. Oftentimes they know their kids and what they're doing in their lives and this and that. So it feels much more like a family. there's a lot of great institutional landlords out there, but it definitely feels more like a business than something a little bit more personal. That sometimes these institutional landlords have properties out here that they really don't know anything about the tenants, but they see it on a spreadsheet. And it's, I call it a spreadsheet versus a relationship that you can sit down and have lunch with. So, and again, a lot of great institutional landlords in this market. My familiarity and my practice is the local ownership out here.
So let's talk about leases. Leases are really key in the small business, lower middle market buy sell area. They can kill a deal. And I think you and I were talking offline a couple of days ago. I've seen over the last couple of years, at least a few deals that either it killed the deal or the deal never, you know, to use a track analogy, it never even got to the first turn because of the landlord.
Yeah.
So talk about leases, what you look for, what you like, and give us a couple, a few examples of traps in leases that tenants really need to watch out for.
Gosh, I mean, we don't have enough time, John, to go into all the different things that can happen in leases. And one thing I will say, I'll preface this before I get a little deeper in this discussion. I always believe that whenever you're going into a lease situation, that a tenant, especially the tenants that I represent, should always have advice from their attorneys, should always have leases reviewed by attorneys, because there are oftentimes just some pitfalls and holes and things that can get people in trouble that I have reviewed a lot of leases in my life, but I always have attorneys help my clients because there are things that can get you into trouble. Leases obviously are important because at the end of the day, if the relationship goes sour, it always goes to the letter of the law, right? And so what is in that lease is what legally is going to happen. And, you know, I work in the real world, but attorneys work in the legal world. And you hope that you don't get to that point where it's just, you know, it just comes down to what's written in the lease, that you can actually have that relationship where it's a little give and take. But look, at the end of the day, the lease is what the lease is. You know, some of the traps that people get caught up on, the biggest one is oftentimes people are in a rush to get a space. They're super excited. They just want to get it done. And I caution people that you need to take the due diligence time to find out what the actual property is like, because more times than not, you're taking a lease in an as-is, whereas condition. And there are things with the electrical, the plumbing, the HVAC. There can be a lot of things wrong with a property, unbeknownst to either the tenant or oftentimes to the landlord. And if that falls on the tenant's responsibility when they have the tenancy in the property, that can be very expensive. So I always advise people, you know, go through the proper due diligence. Even though you don't own the property, you should have things inspected by good people that can make sure there aren't some big whammies, you know, waiting for you by leasing a space. Mm-hmm. In terms of just lease things, I mean, the most obvious thing that I think that people overlook is oftentimes we'll do an initial lease term and we'll have option periods on top of that. And with those option periods are the exercise dates, when you need to notify the landlord that you intend to renew the lease. And those are some of the most overlooked dates I've ever experienced in my life. And one of the reasons I think people should even work with a broker, there's a lot of reasons for working with a broker, but one reason in particular is they can keep track of that for you and have that in their calendar and remind you when those exercise dates are coming, because you want to make sure you're protected as a tenant, that those dates are not overlooked. So that's one of the biggest things that I've seen over the years, that people just, they forget about those dates. And when it's time to renew, they've missed that date. And then suddenly they don't have any leverage anymore. They had leverage before because it was their option and the landlord's obligation. You miss the dates, then the landlord doesn't have an obligation anymore.
That's right. a really good one. And it takes me back to a guy used to be in my Rotary Club who said he would develop, construct, retail buildings and national chain. He said they always go for a 25-year lease with a 25-year automatic renewed option because they forgot once and
exactly
all of a sudden 25 years, they're out of their really prime property.
Yeah. Yeah. And hopefully you don't ever make that mistake more than once.
Yeah.
And, but I've just seen too many times when people just forget that. And that, again, we have the systems in place that we can keep track of that for people. And that's just part of what we do in our practice. Another item is just HVAC, right? Air conditioning is expensive. I deal with this a lot with my retail clients. And you go into a space, if you haven't had it inspected, you know, there's only a certain amount of useful life in these HVAC units. And oftentimes you're taking a space, it might be a 20-year-old unit, and then suddenly it goes out in 2 years. And depending on how the lease is written, you might, as a tenant, be completely responsible for the replacement of that. So we like to make sure that, one, people are on some sort of servicing contract, and that I try to make sure that the replacement of the HVAC units is a landlord expense. Oftentimes it's a landlord expense and they amortize it over the useful life for the tenants, but just make sure that that's going to be a landlord expense, not a tenant expense. Yeah. But again, I would go back to, I just highly recommend before you ever sign a legal document to have your attorney review it. And if someone's working with me, they know that I will always give them a couple great attorneys, one in particular, but great attorneys to work with.
Okay. Yeah, all that makes sense. I'm just going to share a quick story from like 18 years ago, I think. And a gentleman was buying a business and he ended up having to move it because the seller of the business had built the building and few years in had sold the building. And he didn't mind that the lease said he was responsible for everything, roof, walls, foundation, you name it. Well, now the building is older and the landlord wants the same lease. And he had faith in it X number of years ago. And who would have faith in it 20 years later, say?
Yeah. The one last point I would make to this too, John, is that not all leases are created equally.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There's a big discrepancy in the leases that are out there in the market. There are some that are just completely one-sided for landlords. There are others, like the CBA lease in particular, I think is the Commercial Brokers Association lease that we use a lot, is really more fair for both landlord and tenant. But as a tenant, you just have to make sure that, you know, that there are at least some favorable terms for you in that lease. So again, it's something to always be conscious of when you're in the process.
Yeah. I've seen the CBA buy-sell agreement when people try to use it on a business, not real estate. And it just doesn't cover things because in a business, and a seller is representing and warranting, you know, everything they tell the buyer is true and correct. And, you know, your boilerplate agreements don't have that protection.
They don't. Yeah.
So let's finish up, Billy, with why a broker?
Well, we're great people, number one. I mean, I just think in anything that you're doing, it's just always wise to have an expert help you in the process. You know, when you're talking about these different markets and submarkets and different types of, there's a lot of nuances in this business. And I just think that, you know, we're fortunate out here in the Northwest. There are a lot of great brokers that really know what they're doing and help their clients in a really good, responsible way. And I would think that, you know, just like you'd want to have good counsel, just like you'd want to have a good business broker, you want to have a great real estate broker helping you in the process. It's an intimate process. There's a lot of back and forth stuff that goes along. And I just tell people, you know, find somebody that has a great reputation, that really knows their stuff, and find somebody that you feel like you would have a great relationship with, because Like I said, I mean, I feel very blessed to work in a community with really a lot of great people. But not everybody is the same personality. And I really encourage people to work with people that they know, like, and trust to help them in the process.
So in my world, if someone hires us to sell their business, they pay us. If they hire us to buy a business, they pay us. Yeah. And it's different in yours, right? If I'm a tenant and I want to lease some space and I say, Billy, help me find the right space.
Yeah.
Who pays?
Yeah. So that, I mean, I have always felt of all the different things in our business, to be a tenant and go at it alone is one of the less prudent things I've seen, because the way our deals are structured, the commissions are paid by the landlord. The commission is essentially baked into the deal, and the tenant rep broker splits the commission with the landlord broker. So if the tenant comes along and tries to put the deal together on their own, that commission is already set aside by the landlord. And in more instances than not, the landlord broker will simply just keep the entire commission. Some people think, well, gosh, if I'm a tenant and I do this on my own, I'm going to save X percent based on the commission not being paid out. That's actually not the case in almost every circumstance. So the advice I have to all tenants is definitely work with a broker. I mean, you're not paying directly for the commission. The commission's baked into, it's already part of the deal that the landlord has already made public that they're paying this commission. So it's in everyone's best interest, in my opinion, especially tenants, to work with a broker.
Great. Thank you. Great advice, fantastic insights and examples. As you can tell, Billy is a true expert and really loves the commercial real estate space. So tell us, how do people get hold of you?
Easiest way to get a hold of me is to call me or text me. And my phone number is 206-853-8556. And if you forget that and you just Google Billy, B-I-L-L-Y, and my last name's Poll, P-O-L-L, I should be the first name that comes up, and click on that link, and that will send you right to either my telephone number or my email address.
Okay. But
I'm always happy to help, John, anybody in your world. I like to be a resource for people, and you know, it's I'm here for people.
Yeah. If they need anything. One thing I can tell you, because Billy and I have talked about this in the past, he returns calls. Not everyone Absolutely. In his business or my business or many other services actually return calls, but Billy.
Yep. See, that's that hospitality guest services experience coming into play, John.
Okay. Well, thank you, Billy. And again, this is the Getting the Deal Done podcast. And thanks for watching or listening.